Okay, good morning. Last week we began with some Lashon Hara about the copy machine. This week I did some experimentation. I printed it in color and photocopied it into black and white from the color. It didn't work so well, but I think the versions that people have are better than last week, so at least we took one step forward. There are two color copies floating around in the room, so people can, you know, take a look at that, ogle at those copies after this year. I think the custom, a lot of times when people learn a whole lima together, they finish a sugya, mesechta, perek, whatever, so they chip in for a kiddush. So maybe at the end of the summer we could chip in for an ink with color, and we'll try to do that one time, and I'll show you what these are all about. We'll see. It might be a little too expensive, but we'll see if we can arrange something like that. Either way, I think these makoros will do for today. So we, throughout the course of the last 2 weeks, we've regularly come back to the question of the word toeles, the concept of toeles being the idea of that when you speak Lashon Hara for a beneficial purpose, when you speak Lashon Hara for a constructive purpose, for a positive reason, so some of the rules fall to the wayside. Some of the reasons that we think it's aser fall away, and some of the rules limiting your speech also fall away in the same sense. And we spoke in different cases about what might be the case, but we never really came down to the bottom line of these things. A lot of things that came up had to do with business. Some of the things had to do with shidduch, and that's obviously a topic on people's mind, and we keep mentioning that eventually we'll talk about. There are makoros sheets on the bima if you came in. So we will get, hopefully, to those types of specific cases. Today is not necessarily a day for specific cases, definitely not a day to get to the concept of shidduchim, which I think, in my opinion, is probably the more complicated, first of all, because it involves so many parties, and second of all, because it involves so many factors, and third of all, there are makoros on the bima if you're looking. And third of all, because it's so common and it comes up so often that it becomes very difficult to maneuver. It's like a minefield that we're trying to get through, but hopefully we'll get there. We need an introduction first, which is what today is, sort of an introduction to the concept of toeles. A lot of us are familiar with the idea, with the concept of the heter, and we even spoke about one insight into how we get to this heter, how we understand why it's mutter to talk with toeles. We'll rehash that today, and then we'll try to talk about a few related details, and then we'll talk about the conditions. If you look in the second half of the sources, the second page, you'll find the seven conditions that were laid out last week very briefly. We'll just try to expound upon them, talk about them, when they apply, when they don't apply, where the Chafetz Chaim was coming from, and which ones are really the ones that carry the day when you're asking your shaila. So we will start with rehashing what we spoke about previously. We spoke about previously is that the idea of Lashon Hara, the concept of the Isser, the prohibition of Lashon Hara, is not exactly an Isser Nezikin. It's not in Hilchos Nezikin in the Rambam. It's not about damaging other people. It does also damage other people. It does cause issues, like the Gemara tells us. It causes major damage to major amounts of people. But that's not really what underlies the Isser. What underlies the Isser, we've spoken about already a few times, is what? The Midos Ra'os, right? The bad character that is manifest in the speech, what you bespeak, when you speak, the things that you're saying are representative of something that's deeply flawed in a person's character. And that's really the issue with Lashon Hara. We don't need to spell that out anymore. But we mentioned that the Rambam, in the context of Toeles, has an interesting presentation because he doesn't present it at all. We mentioned that the Rambam, even though he's writing a halacha sefer about Hilchos Lashon Hara, or at least the sefer telling us the rules of Lashon Hara, even in that context, he doesn't mention there's a heter of Toeles. He doesn't mention there's a leniency that if it comes to a case where you need to speak because it's a benefit, because it's a constructive purpose, so you're allowed to do so. And we asked, why doesn't the Rambam mention that? And we answered that for the Rambam, it's not a heter. It's not a leniency. It's not that you're speaking Lashon Hara, but it's mutter to speak Lashon Hara in this case because there's a real reason to do so. No, for the Rambam, it's more similar to what we've been saying until now, that there's no Isser at all when you speak Lashon Hara L'Toeles. Lashon Hara is an Isser of speaking with malicious intent. It's an Isser of speaking in an evil, planning sort of way. You're trying to do something evil, and you're speaking to accomplish that goal. If you're speaking for a positive reason, for a beneficial purpose, so there's no Isser. The Isser just doesn't exist. It's not a question of leniencies within the Isser, as we spoke about until now. Now, just to point out, what's very fascinating about this mahalach that the Rambam has, this approach that he takes, is that some of the Achronim point out that this might be true not just only in the Isser of Lashon Hara, but really more globally in terms of mitzvos bein adam l'chaver. If you look in source number one, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, in his Sefer Koveis Ha'aros, his commentary to Maseches Yevamos, Siman Ayin, so Rav Elchanan Wasserman says that this idea of Toeles applies, and this conception of the idea of Toeles applies, not only to Lashon Hara, but really to most or many mitzvos bein adam l'chaver. He gives, for example, it's usser to be makalel someone. It's usser to curse someone. You're not allowed to, you know, say some not nice things to people. That's an isser in the Torah. You're not allowed to curse another Jew. And yet, if you look through Navi, you'll find Navi is replete with examples of the Nevi'im spelling out the curses that are going to befall the Jewish people for the averis that they've done. Now, have the Nevi'im done an isser? So, of course not. They haven't done anything wrong. They were told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to repeat these curses, to tell Klal Yisrael the curses that will befall them for what they've done. But says the Rav Chanan, says the Kovetz Aros, it's even more than that. It's not that they did an Isser, but it was mutter to do the Isser in this case. It's not that they cursed the Jewish people, but they cursed them in the time that it was allowed to be cursing them. No. The pshat is that it's not considered cursing someone unless you're doing it for a negative reason. If you're, you know, maliciously trying to curse someone, if you're trying to damage them, if you're trying to offend them, and so you say a klala to them, that's the Isser of Lo Sakala, that's the Isser of cursing out the other Jewish person. But if the Navi is trying to do it in order to rebuke us, in order to help us move along in our avodas Hashem, in order to help us grow, it's not that it's a mutter form of cursing. It's not cursing. That's not what the Isser was about. The Isser is about doing something in an evil way, and this is not an evil manner of doing it. He says it about other things as well. The mitzvah tochacha, a person is supposed to rebuke a fellow Jew. We'll talk about this a little bit soon. A person is supposed to rebuke a fellow Jew for doing an avera that he might have done, and you're supposed to go ahead and do that, even though it's true that in every rebuke, in every tochacha, a little bit of embarrassment takes place, right? It's hard to avoid a little bit of hard feelings, a little bit of shame, a little bit of embarrassment when you rebuke someone, give them mussar for what they've done, and yet it's mutter to give them mussar. Why? The Torah is letting you do it even though it's usser? Says Rav Chanan, no, it's not that you're doing it even though it's usser. The pshat is that in these mitzvahs, bin amlechavero, the definition of the mitzvah, the isser, of these isurim, bin amlechavero, is that you can't do something evil to a friend. You can't do something in an evil way to a fellow Jew. In these cases, it's not evil. In these cases, it's a positive, beneficial reason. It's a constructive purpose. You're warning him, you're giving a curse as the Navi, whatever it might be, and that's not just an Isser that's permissible. In this case, that's just not the Isser at all. If you look in the source number one, the fourth last line, you see the Chaim Belav Lo Selech Rachel, Rav Elchanan says explicitly, it's true about our Aveira as well. Lashon Hara is an idea of not that it's mutter even though it's usser. In this case, it's mutter to do. No, it's just not the isser at all because it doesn't bespeak any negative feelings, any negative sentiment, any negative character trait when you speak in the context of Toelas. Now, why would that be? Why would Rav Elchanan be right? Why would it be that in mitzvahs bin amlech avero, it's different, it's about the intent, it's about the feelings, it's about the midos that you're engendering and the midos that you're being manifest in the actions that you do? So why is that the case? Why would that be true? So I thought maybe it would be explained the following concept in the other direction. The Rambam in his Hakdama to Pirkei Avos, the Shmona Prakim, so I think it's in the sixth parak, although I'm not 100% sure about that, but I think in the sixth parak, the Rambam spells out that there are some differences between different types of mitzvos. Specifically, he says that many mitzvos many mitzvos bin Amla Mako, many mitzvos that are between us and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the way they work is that a person should say as follows. He should say, I wish I could do the following Isser. I wish I could eat that cheeseburger. I wish I could commit the following Avera, but what am I supposed to do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said not to. Right? That's somewhat familiar to some of us. There's a concept of being understanding that we don't understand. Right? Sort of realizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us not to do something. We would love to do it, but we can't because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said no. Okay, if it's not cheeseburgers, that's your vice. You'll pick something else. But whatever it is, you say, you know, I wish I could do it, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu said no. That's true about Bin Adam Lemakom, says the Rambam. But in most cases of Bin Adam Lechavero, the Rambam seems to say, in the cases where you're talking about interpersonal mitzvahs, mitzvahs about an interpersonal relationship between man to man, woman to woman, fellow to fellow Jew, so in those cases, says the Rambam, you're not supposed to think like that. You're supposed to realize the benefit in what you're doing. So if you're giving tzedakah, you're not supposed to think, oh, I wish I could hold on to all this money. No. You're supposed to give it with a, right? The Torah says you're supposed to give it with a smiling face. You're supposed to be nice about it. You're supposed to realize I'm doing something very beneficial to mankind. I'm helping out a fellow Jew and I'm helping out the whole world by doing this. It's a wonderful mitzvah. I'm improving my character. I'm improving their lifestyle. It's a wonderful thing. And you could say that about chesed and you could say that about every mitzvah, bein am lechavero, any positive mitzvah, bein am lechavero, a person should think, I'm doing a wonderful thing. I'm engendering good character traits. I'm growing in my midos and I'm helping the person next to me. Why is that so? Why is there this difference? Why does the Rambam make a distinction between Bein Adam L'Makom and Bein Adam L'Chavero, that Bein Adam L'Makom, you're supposed to think, what am I doing? I don't want to do this. I'm just doing it because Hashem says so. As opposed to Bein Adam L'Chavero, interpersonal relationships, where you're supposed to think, I'm doing this because it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Why is there that distinction? So, Rav Avram Genachovsky, who was a big Talmud Chacham who lived in Eretz Yisrael, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in one of the Hasidic Yeshivas, a very, very big Gaon, a big London. So they compiled now it's already two Sfarim, though I only own one of them, and I only care to own one of them right now. It's just too big to get through, and the second one is equally big, it seems like. But the one that I have, they compiled some hanhagos, some actions, some things he used to say and some things he used to do during his lifetime. And they put in there that Rav Avram Genachovsky used to explain this Rambam as follows. He used to say that the idea of mitzvos bin am lechavero, the positive mitzvos, doing chesed, v'yavkulecha kamocha, giving tzedakah, all the things that are positive mitzvos of interpersonal relationship, all those mitzvos, what lies at the core, the fundamental reason behind, the underlying yesod to those mitzvos, is growing in your character traits. The idea of doing those mitzvos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us is, yes, we're doing it because Hashem said so, but Hashem said so because He wants us to grow as people, and He wants us to grow in our midos, and He wants us to develop into the best type of people that we can be. So when a person does these mitzvos, he shouldn't be thinking, I wish I didn't have to do tzedakah, I wish I didn't have to do chesed. He should be thinking, oh, gevaldik, an opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me to grow in my midos, to develop my character, to grow as a person internally and through the external actions, and in that way you use the mitzvos to propel you to becoming a better person with better character traits. That's what Rav Avraham Chaikovsky said, the pshat in all these positive mitzvos ben Amnon Chavero is, it's to help you build your character, help you develop yourself into a better person. Now, if we take a little bit liberty, we can turn on the flip side and say the same thing is true in the negative sense. Rav Elchanan is pointing out to us, at least it seems to me, Rav Elchanan is pointing out to us that what's the pshat? What underlies the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, don't do Lashon Hara, don't do embarrassing people, don't do klala, don't do these things that are interpersonal relationship mitzvos, that are, you know, Bein Adam L'Chavero. Why did Hashem say so? So of course we have to do them because Hashem said not to do, right? We have to avoid these averos because Hashem said not to do them. But we can be thinking in our heads, and we should be realizing deep down, that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, the chesed He did for us by giving us these negative commandments, by telling us to refrain from saying Lashon Hara, to refrain from cursing someone, to refrain from yelling at someone, embarrassing someone, whatever it might be, to refrain from these things, Hashem is telling you, maintain your good character. Make sure you don't turn into someone who has midos raos. Make sure you don't develop bad character traits, flawed midos. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was essentially saying when He gave us these mitzvos. So what underlies all of those averos, what underlies the yesod, which underlies and which upon which all these mitzvos are really built, is the idea that we're developing our character and we're maintaining that developed character. And all of Bein Adam L'Chavero is really that way, which is why people like Rav Elchanan and other Achronim can say that any case in which there's a toeles, any case in which there's a beneficial purpose, a constructive reason, that you're saying the Lashon Hara, that you're cursing the person, that you're giving remusar, whatever it might be, so in those cases it's not that it's usser with a heter. The pshat is that it's not the isser because it's not the development of bad character traits. In all those cases of Bein Adam L'Chavero, the whole isser was that you shouldn't develop bad character traits. In these cases, those mitzvahs are missing that that factor. One interesting mashal, I don't think we need it, I happen just to like it. One interesting mashal which I saw in a contemporary sefer, which I had never seen until I guess last week when I saw it for the first time. An interesting mashal, it's a story of Rabbi Rachum, the Mashgiach Emir. Rabbi Rachum was sick, I think it's toward the end of his life, he was sick. And the doctor told him that one of the things he could no longer do because of his illness was he couldn't drink coffee. So, right, that's a sad thing. A couple years ago, we gave a six-week series on coffee, so you know how dear that is to my heart. So, he couldn't drink coffee. So the doctor said, but there's a catch. You're allowed to drink decaffeinated coffee. Drink decaf. So Rabbi Yochanan said, what's the pshat? Like, why am I allowed to drink this coffee, not that coffee? So the doctor explained that the issue is the caffeine, not the taste of the coffee, not the beans. The issue is the caffeine. So if the caffeine is gone, so it's not an issue for you to drink the coffee. Decaf coffee is permissible. And Rabbi Yochanan said, now I understand. This has been on the chavera. He said, if you look, you'll think that the isser is to say Lashon Hara. The isser is to give tochacha. The isser is to give klala. The isser is to embarrass someone, whatever it might be. In all those cases, you think the isser is to do the action. It's not the isser. It's not the coffee. If the coffee were decaf, you could drink it. If the isser, if the action didn't have within it the malicious intent, that evil intent to do bad, that bad expression of character traits, if it didn't have that, it would be decaf averus. It would be decaffeinated averus with no underlying yesod there, and you'd be allowed to perform those things. Not that it's mutter, even though the coffee is going to be bad for you and you're not supposed to have coffee, it will let you have coffee. No. It's not the same thing. It's not caffeine. The only issue was the caffeine. So too in all these mitzvos, the only issue was the bad midos. If the bad midos are gone, it's mutter. It's litoelis. It's mutter. It's true by so many of these mitzvos. So that's what these achronim, Rav Elchanan and leading them, say, that this idea of toelis that we've spelled out until now, that we've really, you know, we've been on this train for already 3 weeks, this idea of toelis being not a heter, not a leniency, but just the isser doesn't exist anymore. It's not really what the isser was talking about. So it's expanded, it's extended to these other mitzvahs ben Adam L'Chavero. But I've sort of been pulling the wool over your eyes, not fully. I mean, this is all true in the Rambam, and it's true in Avachan, and it's true in many other people. But I've been a little bit tricking you in the sense that not everyone does agree to this. Not everyone subscribes to this conception of Toelis. Not everyone agrees that this is the way that you would look at the Heter of Toelis. Some people actually look at it a little bit differently. And to understand that, we need to go a little bit deeper. The other way, potentially, to look at the Heter of Toelis is not that there's no Isser, but rather that what? There's an Isser of Lashon Hara, but it's outweighed by some other value. There's some other value that even though you're doing the Isser of Lashon Hara, even though you're not supposed to speak this way, even though this is really the wrong thing to do, in this case, the ends justify the means, so to speak. The what you're doing ultimately outweighs the negatives of the risk of speaking Lashon Hara. And in that sense, we get out of the prohibition, and you're supposed to speak Lashon Hara in those cases. Now, why would that be? What would ever outweigh a Lashon Hara? So if you look in source number two, the answer seems to be a simple pasuk, although it takes a couple of steps to get there. Source number two, the pasuk, if you see in the bar over there, the pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim says, Lo saman al dam re'echa, a person cannot stand idly by when what? When their friend is being killed, it sounds like. Okay, Lo saman al dam re'echa. Don't stand idly by on the blood of your friend, meaning when your friend's blood is chas v'shalom being spilt, you can't stand by, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin Ayin Gimel says means, at least very literally, which is the Gemara seems to interpret it as, the Gemara says it means that if a person sees his friend chas v'shalom drowning or being surrounded by armed bandits or whatever it might be, you have a chiv, you have an obligation to, whether or not you should put yourself at risk is a different question, but you have an obligation to try your best to save this person from any undue harm, to save this person from mortal danger, to bring them out of the ocean, to bring them out of the being besieged by these bandits, and that's what your chiv is. Lo saman al dam re'echa, you can't stand idly by while someone else is murdered or damaged in that way. That's what the Gemara says the pasuk means. Does it go any further than just death? Are you a mechuyav to stand to make sure you don't stand by and jump in and help someone when it's other damages? So if you look in source number two in the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam says, in his Mrs. Losa, says, yes, it extends not only to Sakanas HaMaves. If you look in the underlines, he says, Sakanas HaMaves, Oa Hefsed. Right? If a person has an opportunity to save someone from certain death, or he has the opportunity to save him from a financial loss, says the Rambam, that also is incumbent upon you. That also is within your obligation, within your chiyuv of lo saman al dam re'echa. Don't stand idly by while your friend is damaged in a mortal sense, or damaged in the sense of not a fatal injury, but in the sense of a monetary loss. So the Rambam says both those things apply. It happens to me that Meshech Chachma on Parshat Kedoshim disagrees. He thinks that the Chazal did not think this way, but either way, that's what the Rambam seems to say. The Minchas Chinuch in source number two, a little bit lower, extend this even further. Minchas Chinuch says that if you have to save your friend from death, and you have to save your friend from financial loss, certainly, maybe it's even a kal v'chomer, you have to save your friend from spiritual harm, which means that if you saw your friend running with the wrong chevra, if you saw your friend doing the wrong things and being influenced by the wrong people, or being tricked into doing averas, whatever it might be, and you see they're being duped in these ways, it's upon you a chiyuv, it's upon you an obligation to go ahead and step in and stop that from happening, to make sure that this person stays away from these averas, to make sure that you take them away from the situation that's causing them to the averas. So spiritual harm, physical harm, financial harm, all of these things are within the context of lo saman al dam re'echa, that if a person sees damage that is going to befall another person, they have to make sure that they step in and prevent that from happening to the best of their abilities. Now, I would add right here, this is also true about a person's own self, right? We have to take measures to make sure that no damage comes to us either. The pasuk is stressing that even if you see someone else, a third party, or another person being damaged in any of these ways, so you also have to step in and make sure that you can do your best to save them from that damage. Again, physical, fatal, or spiritual, or financial. That's what the Gemara tells us, that's what the Pasuk tells us, and that's what the Post can tell us these Pesukim mean. So, if you go back to our question, we were wondering, you have an Isser of Lashon Hara on the one hand, and we're saying sometimes that Isser of Lashon Hara is outweighed. There's a risk, but the benefits outweigh the risk. There's a cost-benefit analysis, and it comes out that you should say Lashon Hara. What could ever outweigh Lashon Hara? How could you ever beat out Lashon Hara? It's an Isser d'oraisa. It's a terrible Isser. There's so many Yisurim involved in it. The Chafetz Chaim shries for so long about how bad it is. How could you ever outweigh it? How could you ever beat it? So now we have the answer. The answer is this Pasuk of Lo Saman al Dam Re'echa. A person has to realize that there are cases where, yes, you're not supposed to speak Lashon Hara. No, you're not supposed to say that this person's a bad guy. You're not supposed to say he's a crook. You're not supposed to say he's a bad influence on your son. You're not supposed to say any of those things. But if this guy's going to get stolen from, or this guy's going to get influenced poorly because this guy's going to be a bad influence spiritually on him, or he's going to rob him blind, whatever the case is, or he's going to endanger him physically, whatever it might be, you have a chiv of lo saman al dam re'echa. You can't stand idly by. You can't watch that danger happen and befall that person. You have to step in and make sure you stop, you prevent that damage from coming. Now, true, it's not permitted to say Lashon Hara, but in this case, we'll permit you because the risk is worse than the reward, in the sense that you have to, the lesser Isser is to speak Lashon Hara rather than let this person be murdered or financially harmed or whatever the case might be. If you look in source number three, you'll see Rav Meisher Sternbach, others point this out as well. He just says it very poignantly. Rav Meisher Sternbach has a tshuva just devoted to this point where he says everyone learns the Sefer Chafetz Chaim and thinks that when you come to a shir about Chafetz Chaim, or when you learn the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, you think it's about what you can't say. It's all about the Yisurim of Lashon Hara, about when you can never talk and how you can never say anything and how it's never mutter to talk about other people. And you're right. A lot of the Sefer is about that. But, says Rav Meisher Sternbach, you have to realize that an even more important thing that comes out of the Sefer is all the times that you can and must talk. All the times that there's a chiv of lo samad adam reacha, that a person is in danger in any of those three senses, financial, spiritual, or physical danger, and you have to prevent that from coming because of lo samad adam reacha, make sure you learn those parts of the Chafetz Chaim as well. Make sure you don't say, hang your hat on the Yisrael Lashon Hara and say, I'm a tzaddik, I would never speak Lashon Hara, when Nebuch, this person next to you, is being hurt in some way. We can't be, tzaddik in the wrong way, a chassid shot, that we can't be a tzaddik who pretends that we're a tzaddik because we're relying on the halachas of Chafetz Chaim. The halachas of Chafetz Chaim include the cases where it's a mutter and a mitzvah to reveal, disclose the information, even though, generally speaking, it's usher. But in those cases, you have to prevent the damage from befalling the person. I have a different mashal for this one. We spoke about coffee until now, so I got a different mashal for my wife. My wife is studying to be a pharmacist, so she, I guess, is the biggest bucky in medicine. So she told me the following thing, which apparently is very simple, I just hadn't realized. So she said, what's the pshat in medicine? Medicine, generally speaking, there are side effects. Some people get a headache, some people get dizzy, some people get fatigue, some people get worse, heart problems. There's all sorts of issues that can come from medicine, all sorts of side effects. And each medicine has side effects, correct? Each medicine has a long list of side effects. Some of them seem like they're just covering their bases, but probably some of them are really true. Some of those side effects really do exist. Fine. So what's the pshat when I go to a doctor and he says, you're sick with whatever problem, take the following medicine. So is it because those side effects won't happen to me? No, the side effects might happen. I might get dizzy, I might get a headache, I might get nauseous, right? I might have any of the things that are listed on the side of the bottle, but what? The reward for taking the medicine, the remedy, outweighs those risks of side effect. It's worth it for me to take the medicine, even if I get dizzy, because being dizzy is better than, I don't know, fainting every 10 minutes, whatever, disease I don't have, Baruch Hashem. It's better than doing all those things. So I'd rather take this medicine, take the lighter issues, the side effects, if they should come, rather than take the bigger issues of the disease that I'm, Rahman al-Islam, suffering from. So, says the wife, that's the pshat in medicine. That's also the pshat here in Toelis as well. The pshat in Toelis is not that the side effects don't exist. You very well may cause damage. You very well may hurt another person. Your Lashon Hara very well may be a chetzesh al-Lashon Hara in the sense that it's the wrong type of speech and it's not a good thing to say. But in this case, the ends justify the means. The side effects are worth taking in order to accomplish the greater goal of saving another person from damage. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Sure. Oh, well, so I will talk to my wife about that. She's a pharmacist. So maybe it actually might be more incumbent upon her even. But I'll mention to her that was raised. That's an issue. It's true in Lashon Hara as well, right? We spoke about the first week that a person is supposed to mention the case that he's dealing with, to mention that you should realize this is really Lashon Hara, but it's Toelis. So, no matter how you construe, however you really think of the idea of Toelis, you should be telling the side effects, just like in the mashal to medicine as well. But yeah, the doctor should be mentioning that these risks might come. So, yeah. Good.
What happens in those gray areas when Toelet is subjective?
Yeah.
How are we to judge? Let's say, I'm looking at some of the other parts, this is my first time here, with Shadokan first.
How do you like it so far? Okay, yeah, we'll talk after, yeah.
Okay, anyway, how does the average person who's not as knowledgeable judge if Toelet, in other words, what the area
good. So that's a very fair question. The question basically is that all of the examples we gave, again, very extreme ones, a person's being murdered, or a person's being damaged very seriously in a spiritual sense, all those are obviously Toelis. What about the cases that are a little sketchier? It's not clear. It's a little bit of a gray area in terms of whether it's Toelis or not. So that's not only a good question, that's the question. And really, a person spends their whole life asking those questions. I think we will address it a little bit towards the middle to the end of this year, in the sense that there are cases where you have to really understand what happened and what you're revealing to other people, whether it's an isser, whether it's a danger, whether it's a problem. So we will talk about that a little bit, what you can do to clarify the metzias. But I would just say now that in terms of shidduchim, that's probably the best example of a murky area where you're not sure what's right and what's wrong. So maybe we'll talk about some of those things next week. Maybe not. You should come back either way. We'll try to address some of those issues. But generally speaking, the answer to your question is you'll have to ask shailas in a lot of cases. You'll have to go to someone and say, hey, I'm not 100% sure if what this person did was so wrong or if it's so dangerous, and you'll have to talk to someone. And that's okay. We believe in asking shailas. If the only thing we did here was accomplish the ability to know what to ask and not necessarily to paskin on our own, so then we've accomplished a lot. And that would be a wonderful benefit to the shiurim. But sure, there will be a lot of gray areas in what we discuss. So that's the basic approach. The opposite approach to the Rambam, right? Everything we've said until now talks about how Lashon Hara is an Isser and Midos, and when those Midos aren't there, when it's a Toelas, when it's really a beneficial purpose, so there's just no Isser, there's nothing to talk about, there's nothing wrong with saying Lashon Hara. Now we're saying a different approach. We're saying that there is the Lashon Hara here. It is like the wrong thing to do technically. Objectively, this is wrong, but in this subjective case, this one instance, the ends justify the means, and you push the Isser to the side and say the Lashon Hara anyways. Now, there will be Nafka Minasis, which we'll talk about in just a moment. The reason why it's important to spell this out and not just to confuse us and talk about two different ways of conceiving of the Heter, the reason it's important to point it out is because I believe that this really is the approach of the Chafetz Chaim. Now, true, you'll find examples within the Sefer Chafetz Chaim where he, you know, kind of appeals to our other logic. He kind of talks about it in the sense of being, you know, not an Isser at all. There are cases like that, but in many cases, the Chafetz Chaim talks about the Heter of Toelas, talks about the leniency of talking Lashon Hara for a beneficial purpose in this second way, in this latter way, in the sense that it is usser, but you're allowed to do it because the ends justify the means, the risks are outweighed by the rewards. Now, let me give you one example, which I think is probably the most famous example, just because the Sfarim that I look at that talk on the Chafetz Chaim bring this one up most regularly. But if you look in source number 4, you'll see the Chafetz Chaim, not here, but elsewhere, says this pretty explicitly. In the beginning of Rechilas Klal Tes, he says it pretty explicitly, but here, it seems like it's implicit. So here's the following case, and this seems like, a relatable case to all of us. So you know your friend is going to a certain store. She's going to buy something in a certain store. And you know that the store owner is going to rip her off. He's going to charge her, I don't know, let's just say for now, double the price, triple the price, some crazy amount of money. So what do you think? You should tell her not to go to the store? Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Why? Losing out money is part of the, right? Los Amel Amriacha means financial loss also. Let's say she's going to spend $300 instead of $100. I'm not good at math. Was that triple, double, whatever? One of those. So she's going to lose that much money, you know, more than whatever she was supposed to spend. So that's a loss of money. You prevent your friend from losing money. Los Amel Amriacha. Okay, Nebuch, you have to speak a little Lashon Hara, but you push the Yisr of Lashon Hara aside and you do the mitzvah of Losan Adam Recha. That makes sense to everyone, right? Everyone could agree to that. That's a Toelas. Good. The Chafetz Chaim says that, so I'm not going to trick you here, but he says something a little bit trickier. So if you look in the above the underline, you know, this is the Chafetz Chaim, and then it's the footnotes underneath. So in the second sort of paragraph on the upper section, Ove Midos of Mishkalos, if you know they're going to mess up the weight system in the store, Ove Shivoy HaMekach, or they're going to, you know, overprice the object. Okay, that's the example he gives. So they're going to overprice the object. So Bivad Leitzarach Lomer Lo Kadesh Shalo Yavalizet. That's what the Chafetz Chaim says. Exactly what we said. You have to tell the person don't shop there, or realize that when you shop there you're going to get ripped off, and then the person can choose to avoid that financial loss. Now, Chafetz Chaim, the footnote, says something fascinating. He says, Aval, in the underline, Imho na he pachlos mishtus. If the overpricing is less than a sixth, why is that relevant? Right. The amount, the Isra of Ona, of overcharging the Torah, is only really violated. It's debatable how bad it is when you don't do this, but it's only fully violated, let's say, when you overcharge by a sixth or more. When you overcharge by less than a sixth, so maybe you did something wrong with Chachila, maybe not, but it certainly is not the regular classic case of Onah. So if a person is going to be overcharged by less than a sixth, some smaller amount of overpricing, Efsher, the Ein Lomer Lo, says the Chafetz Chaim, in that case, maybe you don't tell the person. Maybe you shouldn't reveal that this person is going to be overcharged. What do you guys think of that? Kind of surprising, no? If the Isser of Lo Samad Adam Reacha means prevent financial harm, prevent financial loss, prevent physical loss, prevent financial loss. So this person's going to go in, they're going to get charged a fifth or a fourth. Which way it goes? Whatever, you know what I mean. The other way. But it's going to be less than a sixth more than what the original price was. So I have other talents. It's not math. So a sixth of a price or, you know, just less than that amount, they're going to be overcharged in the store. So they're going to lose money also, right? They're going to be losing money. Tachlis, they're going to lose $5, $10, $15. It won't be $300, it won't be $200, but it'll be some amount of money, more than Shavu Prut. It'll be some, you know, it's not negligible, it's some amount of money. So why don't you prevent that loss? It's a toelas. It's a benefit here. You're preventing them from losing money, from financial loss. What's the answer? If you think... What's that? It's parnassah for the person. That's certainly something to weigh, but you have an obligation to make sure that this person knows the facts going in, that he's not getting overcharged.
Why would you not tell
them? Right, why would you not tell them? Exactly. So here's what they're going to say for the Chafetz Chaim. Until now, we thought of toelas, that anytime there's a benefit, there's just no issur. You don't have any evil intent, no malicious intent. But if you think of toelas not as that, you think of toelas rather as you have to weigh the risks against the rewards. So usually, if you're, you see someone drowning, dying on the side of the road, you have to go help them by, let's say, even if it involves saying Lashon Hara somehow, you have to do that. Why? Because it's obvious that the Isser Lashon Hara is a little bit less than the Isser of standing idly by when someone's murdered. And the same is true of a major financial loss. Says the Chafetz Chaim, in every case, you have to weigh it. You have to make a cheshbon, you have to make a calculated, you have to make a calculated assessment and see, well, is this case going to be a case where the risks are outweighed by the rewards or just the opposite? Sure, everything is subjective.
Everything is
you. Sure. So the Chafetz Chaim says, Efsher, he says over here. He's not sure. He's not 100% sure. He can't tell you for sure it's Asur to disclose the information in this case, but he's not sure that it's Mutter. And the reason is because he's not 100% sure what the objective line is. Where's the line drawn in the sand? Where's the boundary? But if you could find the case where the loss of money was less significant than the loss that's caused, the damage that's caused by doing the Isser of Lashon Hara, in that case, as the Chafetz Chaim, you would have no license to disclose the information. It's true, you're doing it with good intent, you're doing it for the right reasons, but ultimately, the damage you're causing is more than the damage you're saving the other person from, and you have to make that calculation every time. Now, this is so, it's like it was just brought up a second ago, this is so complicated to try to figure out in every case. You have to make a calculation in this case, in that case, and you have to measure money, you have to measure feelings, like what do you measure in each case? I agree. It's very difficult to try to assess in every individual scenario, but that's the basic rule that seems to flow out of these approaches of the Chafetz Chaim.
I can imagine if someone is like penny pinching with their life, and every dime and every cost they can't manage.
Exactly. Okay. So I think that's a very valid. I think that's a very valid point. So she's pointing out. It changes. Right. So I think it's a very valid point.
They have enough money, and they're just going to lose.
Right. So I can't.
Really making ends meet just barely.
Right. Right. So I'm not going to speak for the Chafetz Chaim, you know, I'm not his spokesperson here exactly, but I will say that I totally agree with you in logic, in the sense that you have to basically look at every individual scenario, not only objectively, but even subjectively. So if you see a person who's going to get ripped off by $5, but they're driving their Lexus on the way to get ripped off by $5, if you have a Lexus, something more fancy, whatever you guys want to, whatever you want to use for example, so he's driving his expensive car to go get ripped off by $5, okay, so like maybe the $5 is worth swallowing, but if you have a case where a person's, like you said, penny pinching, they're poor, they live month to month, so they're going to lose $5, they're going to break the bank or something. Is that the good way or the bad way? What does breaking the bank do? Is too much money or too little money? Too little money. Yeah, they're going to break the bank.
Ruin the reputation of the store.
Right. So you have to weigh the fact that you're ruining the reputation of the store, but if this person's going to be broke because of what's happening, so it outweighs the fact the reputation is going to be ruined. So yeah, you might have to look at every case, and it might be very difficult to assess every scenario. In economics, this approach is very difficult. Yeah.
But then, what's to say that he's not going to charge more if it's his character, if it's his nature?
Maybe in the future. And then you'll have to change your approach to dealing with him.
So isn't it our obligation to tell the person to get the sick?
So certainly... Right. So certainly in the first Mahalath that we spoke about until now, that would be true. You'd be 100% right. If it's all about Midos and you're not doing anything wrong by disclosing the information, then yeah, you're 100% right. We're saying that Chafetz Chaim has this new conception of Toelas that it's not really about Midos. It's about weighing the factors. Is this worth disclosing the information? So in some cases, you'll be right. In some cases, the guy is such a crook, it's worth disclosing information. In some cases, he's not necessarily doing exactly the right thing. And the Chafetz Chaim says, still, it might not be worth it to disclose the information. He's not 100% sure, but it might not be worth it to disclose the information. Again, each case will have to be judged independently, but you're 100% right. You'll have to look at the person. How bad is he going to rip everyone off and figure out based on that? So that's the Chafetz Chaim's approach in general, and that's one application of the approach. Again, he doesn't look at it as Toelas being, hey, there's no Isser because there's no Midos Raos. He's looking at it as, there is an Isser Lashon Hara here, we should mitigate it as much as we can, but you have to sort of step over that Isser and do the Lashon Hara and speak the Lashon Hara, because ultimately you're going to do a better thing by saying those words. That's what the Chafetz Chaim's approach seems to be. Now, that is his general approach, and that's one application. If you turn over the page to page two, so you'll see, last week we had one box that listed all seven conditions in one place. Here we're spelling them out all one by one. Basically, we mentioned last week that the Chafetz Chaim has this tall order. Oh no, we mentioned this maybe even 2 weeks ago. I mentioned this last week. The Chafetz Chaim has a tall order. He has a certain set of conditions, seven rules, which a person must fulfill these conditions in order to speak Lashon Hara L'Toelas. Meaning, we think, oh, if you have good intent, if you have a positive intention, of, you know, beneficial purpose, so you're just allowed to say it no matter what. And we'll see, maybe some people do agree to that. But the Chafetz Chaim says, no, once you realize you're doing something for a constructive reason, once there's a benefit to what you're saying, you also have to meet the following seven conditions in order to be sure that you could say what you want to say. We mentioned them very briefly last week. This week what we'll do is we'll spell each one of them out. We'll try to talk about the logic behind each of them. And we'll try to show you that sometimes there are exceptions to each of these conditions, which is important because it makes them more realistic and more applicable and more makes us more able to use them, because if you look at them as floating in the sky and unable to reach them, so you won't be able to do them. But if we realize that there are cases where they don't apply or where they apply in a different sense, so then we'll be more capable, more able to achieve the goal. But the Chafetz Chaim says there are seven conditions. What I just want to point out before I say the seven conditions out is that what the Chafetz Chaim is doing here is he's limiting your ability to say Lashon Hara, correct? You see a case where it's usher to say these words, but there's a big toeles, there's a big gain. You're saving someone from harm, you're saving someone from getting ripped off, whatever the case is. So in those cases, you think you should say Lashon Hara. Says the Chafetz Chaim, before you do that, halt, stop right there. See if you can fit these seven conditions into what you're saying. See if you can say these words with these seven conditions being met. Now what the Chafetz Chaim is doing is basically saying, it's not mutter to say what you're saying. It's only allowed for you to say it if you fill these seven conditions, because generally he looks at the Isser as it's an Isser that's there and it needs to be mitigated as much as possible. You need to limit the Isser. So you need to make sure that you're filling seven conditions before you speak. If you held that Lashon Hara was just didn't exist when you were doing it for right reasons, when you had good midos, not bad midos, so you don't need conditions. If you're doing it for the right reasons, you're doing it for the right reasons. There's no evil intent. There's no malicious intent. It's just mutter to say. But if you conceive of the heter of Toelis as the Isser is there, but we're pushing it to the side and allowing you to do it in order to save someone else from certain danger, so then you can apply seven conditions, and you need to fill and meet those seven conditions before you talk. The Chazon Ish famously disagreed with the Chafetz Chaim. The Chazon Ish said that the heter of toeles is such that if a person has the right intentions, they should say what's on their mind. They should try to do it in the right way. They shouldn't, be too mean, and we'll talk about some of the things that he would still agree to. But the strictly speaking, the seven conditions don't apply. Once you have those intentions, so you're allowed to say what you need to say, and that's because of what we said until now, until this point, that he disagrees with the Chafetz Chaim very fundamentally. He thinks that the Pshat and Toelis is that there's no Isser when there's no bad midos. If you had good intention, there's no bad midos. Say what you need to say. You see something, say something. Just do so, and don't start to think about the different Tanayim, the different conditions. But the Chafetz Chaim doesn't say that. The Chafetz Chaim says there are seven conditions. Let's talk about them one by one right now. In Aleph on page 2, know with certainty. So the Chafetz Chaim tells us that a person, before they want to say Lashon Hara, before they want to disclose a certain information, they have to know with certainty. Either, we said last week, they have to have witnessed it firsthand, or they have to know very clearly from, witnesses of 100 people witnessing it, it was on TV, whatever. They know very clearly what happened, then they can disclose that information for the right reasons. That's the first rule that's applied by the Chafetz Chaim, the first condition that a person needs to meet. Now, I think that's pretty sensible. Do people agree? But I'll give a relatable example, just in case it doesn't sit well with you. This example, I don't know if I forget now if I mentioned this in the beginning. The biggest challenge of talking about the sugya of Toelis is that it's not really a sugya. It's not one sugya. It's not one place, one chapter in Hilchos Lashon Hara. The idea of Toelis is a theme that runs through every single case of Lashon Hara. Every time you're thinking, should I say something, you have to think, is there a reason I'm saying this? So it's kind of hard to cull from the various sources and dole out the things that don't really matter to the case that we're talking about, and try to isolate the different factors within the sugya of Toelis, unless you have a really very farish type of view of all of Hilchos Lashon Hara, all of Sefer Chafetz Chaim, which I don't. But I utilize a sefer called L'Reacha Kamocha, which I've quoted before, of David Aryav, who did a very good job, just at least pointing to different places to look in the Chafetz Chaim to show you the different places where certain things are really brought out, certain themes are brought out more poignantly, so that that you should get credit for that. And he gives the following case. He says, a good case to show how you should know with certainty, I should be a mavara, you should clarify the metzias before you say something. So imagine the following case, a sad case. It's a case of shidduchim. Yay. So, it's a sad case of shidduchim. So a person comes to you and they say, I know your friend, whatever. Huh? You have a name? Oh, I thought you were suggesting a name. So we'll do Rivka. Anyone here Rivka? Oh, wow. I was lucky. Okay. So we have a friend, Rivka, and I heard you're friends with her. Yeah, I'm friends with her. I'm looking to set her up. Oh, great. Gavaldik, that's great. You should set her up. Yeah, I heard she's divorced. So you say, yeah, Rivka's divorced. That's true. And the person, the Shadchan, says, I'm asking this l'toeles. There's a benefit to what I'm asking. This isn't Lashon Hara. I'm not a yenta. Whose fault was it? Whose fault was the divorce? So, okay, exactly. So, first of all, there are extreme cases where you know the answer to that. Extreme cases. But let's talk about 99% of the cases. You don't know, and even if you thought you know, you'd be wrong, right? There's no case where it's someone's fault. You can't possibly figure that out. You can't possibly clarify. But they're asking for good reasons. This person's not an evil person. They're asking because they're a shadchan. They're trying to figure out, is this a good shidduch? Will the problems that persist in that relationship come through to this relationship as well? That's what they're trying to dig at. That's what they're trying to get at. That's what they're trying to find out. So they're asking Litoeles, whose fault was it? Was it her fault? Because if so, I'm not sure this is the right shidduch. So what do you say? So you answer, it's Toeles? So, right, exactly, you can't know. So the Chafetz Chaim says, if you don't know the Metzius, if you can't say with clarity, you can't say with certainty, I know what the issue is, I know this piece of information, you can't possibly disclose that. And like we said, even if you think you know in this case, you'll probably be wrong in every single case. So it's almost in too extreme of a case. But the point is made very clear in a very relatable way that if a person asks you something or a person tells you something and they're telling you something that they can't possibly know with certainty or you can't possibly clarify it with certainty, then you can't disclose that information. You can't share that with another person. You have to be very, very certain about what you're saying. And again, this makes sense to us because if a person doesn't know the full story, if a person doesn't realize all the factors that went into a story and they're repeating that information and going along and spreading it, so then they might not be actually speaking Latoelas. They might have thought they're doing it for a beneficial purpose, but they misunderstood the whole story. So they're going ahead and sharing with the people, and they're sharing the wrong information with people, misinforming people. You're causing gossip, you're causing rumors to spread for the wrong reasons entirely. So that's really why the Chafetz Chaim comes onto this rule in general. That's why it's his first condition. Now, the Chafetz Chaim does give provisions to save us from certain cases. Because there are cases where, let's say, for example, you're in business with someone, and you know, or you're not in business, but you're friends with them, whatever, but you know this person wants to go into business with a third person, okay? They want to go into business with Reuven, and you heard through the grapevine from pretty reliable sources, but it's Lashon Hara, but you heard through the grapevine that Reuven's a crook. He's going to rob him. So you don't know for sure. You never saw his papers. You never saw him commit the crimes. You can't say for sure that Reuven's a crook, but you heard from pretty reliable sources that that's true. So what do? You don't tell your friend? You don't tell your partner? You don't tell them what's going on? On the one hand, it is Lashon Hara. On the other hand, you're going to save him from a bad business deal, right? So what do you do in that case? Says the Chafetz Chaim, it's in this source Aleph. You see, I put it for you over here. The Chafetz Chaim says there's a way to get around this. There are times where you can basically turn to your friend and say, listen, I don't know for sure. I haven't clarified this. I heard a rumor from pretty reliable sources. Shamati, he says, I heard that maybe this guy is he's a little bit of a crook. He's not so straight. And because of that, I think it would be advisable to avoid doing business with him. Did you claim to know? Did you spread the rumor so strongly? Did you publicize it? Did you say with certainty? No, none of those things. You very quietly, very discreetly pointed out that you heard some rumors. You're not sure it's true. And the Chafetz Chaim adds that you should even tell the guy, we're not allowed to believe it's true, but we are allowed to be careful. We are allowed to protect ourselves. And if this is the rumor going around on this guy, I don't want to deal with him in business. I don't think we should go into a deal with him. In that case, as the Chafetz Chaim, is a way to get out of this issue. Again, you have to know with certainty in most cases to disclose the information fully. But if you just want to protect someone, if you just want to tell someone, I heard something, I think this might be true, there's a rumor this might be true, then obviously you should know with some certainty. Obviously you shouldn't go around spreading every rumor just because of this clause. But if you know with some certainty you've heard from reliable sources, then you're able to say to the person, I heard maybe this is an issue, and therefore there's a good reason to think that we should avoid dealing with this person. That would be considered a toeles, where you can get around this first condition of the Chafetz Chaim. That's the Chafetz Chaim says himself, and that would seem to be very logical to me, and I think to everyone here as well. In source Bays, you'll see the second condition of the Chafetz Chaim, do not jump to conclusions. Now, there are many cases, I think last week we did a case of Chalav Stam, right? If a person is drinking milk, and you see they're drinking milk, so first you shouldn't assume the first Tanai, first condition, you shouldn't assume they're drinking Chalav Stam. You should check what the bottle says, fine. Let's say you find out they're drinking Chalav Stam, it's not Chalav Yisrael. So you shouldn't jump to conclusions and think they should go to jail for that. That's not necessarily the biggest issue. Maybe it is. I'm not sure. But you have to find out. Ask your Rav, is this a bad thing? Is it not a bad thing? Is it a chumra? Is it a mit? Whatever it might be, you have to not jump to conclusions. So I'll give you a better case that happened to me at this point. I don't know, 9 years ago, let's say, or 8 years ago, something like that. I have trouble math. Yeah, okay. So a couple years ago, I was learning in Eretz Yisrael in Yeshiva, and I used to daven at one of the local shtibels in the morning, in the afternoon. The yeshiva was a little early, so I would daven at the shtibel sometimes, and I knew at some point the collectors who would come in every day, very good, seemingly good, straight, normal people, collecting money for themselves, for others. And you get to know them to the point where if you see them every day, you see them in the street too, and you recognize them, which is fine. That's nice. Say good morning to them. Say hi to them. So one time I came out very early in the morning. Okay, I guess I wasn't always up so late, but whatever. I came out early in the morning. I don't know if it's still dark outside, but it wasn't. No one was in the street. And I saw one of these collectors who I knew, very well by face, walk up to a delivery outside of one of the local shops and take a couple of fruits and walk away. He put them into his pocket and he walked away. So what does that look like to the observer? Looks like he's a ganav. Okay, looks like he's stealing. And I admit that's definitely what I thought. I definitely thought this guy was, it was dark, it was quiet, it was empty. He definitely, you know, didn't want people to see him, it looked like. He didn't say good morning to me when he saw me. And he took the fruits and he walked away and he hid them. So I immediately thought that maybe he was a ganav. But I wondered, first of all, am I allowed to think that? Am I supposed to think he's a ganav? Maybe I thought of other creative things. Maybe he has a deal with his store owner who does a chesed without telling him, without telling other people, hey, when no one's there, take some fruit for the day and, you know, I'll provide for him that way. I think that's very plausible. I don't even think that's such a far-fetched thing. You know, but the way it looked to me, it didn't exactly look that way. He was kind of sneaking around. And there are other possible ways. Maybe he works at the store and that's part of his deal to take, he made the delivery, he gets to take a couple of fruits. I don't know. There are things that could be true. Or am I allowed to think, I saw the guy, he's a gun if he was stealing from the store. And the next step is the question that I really want to get to is, what should I do now when I go to the shtiebel the next day? Should I tell people, this guy might be a ganav, don't give him money? Or no, I don't know for sure. I shouldn't tell other people not to give money to him, so I shouldn't spread the Lashon Hara because I can't say for sure. What do you guys think? He needs it so bad. That's definitely something to think about.
Why can't you ask him?
That's an excellent point. So we'll get there in one or two steps. 100%. That's an excellent point. Let's say you were me and you weren't smart enough to think to ask him. Or you were scared. Let's say I was scared. I don't know. Maybe it's an armed robber. I don't know. Don't want to embarrass. Okay, so we'll see if that matters. But definitely a good point. Ask the store owner if he has a deal with the guy. But then I'm basically telling on him. Okay. You could wake up if you want to. I didn't want to, you know, go out every day to see if he was there. Yeah. Don Lekavskos. That's the most important. Don Lekavskos. Three words. Math. I'm telling you every time. So Don Lekavskos is probably the most important three words in this. So if you look at the source Bays over here, the second condition, the Shari Tshuva of Ben Yona. So I remember. Sorry. Let me just fill in the story. So I wasn't sure what to do, and I had the Rebbeim, but I asked someone in America to ask another one of someone who later became my Rebbe, this Shaila, and he sent back, you should look in the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim quotes Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva, who deals with this question. If you look here, this is the Shari Tshuva, this is the Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that it depends. It depends on the case. If you see someone, let's say, who is a Yari El Kim, he says, he's a big Yari Shemaim, he's a big tzaddik, you know he's a good guy generally, and you see he's doing something that looks like it might be wrong, but there's ways to explain that it might be okay. Okay, so if he's generally a big tzaddik, then even if the ways to explain that it might be okay are very far-fetched, very hard to believe, they're way out there in right field, but since he's generally a really good guy, you have to assume that he probably was doing the right thing, and you probably misunderstand the scenario, you probably didn't really witness what you thought you witnessed, and in that case, you have to be done the kaf zechus, because the guy's a good guy generally, you have to assume he's keeping that chazaka in place. What if he's a benoni? What if he's like most of us? He usually does good things, sometimes does bad things. And you see him in one of those cases where it looks like he might have done a bad thing. Says the Chafetz Chaim, based on the Rabbeinu Yonah, it depends again. If it looks like a case where it definitely looks like he did the wrong thing and you're just trying to make far-fetched excuses for him, then you could assume that he was doing the wrong thing. And in some cases, if there's going to be damage to other people, you can spread that information if you have to. If it's disclosed to other people, you can. If, however, it leans a little bit to the side where it might be that he was doing the right thing, then even though ideally you would, you know, reserve judgment, ideally you wouldn't judge him for doing what he did, ideally you would assume that maybe what he did was right, it's understandable, I'm sorry, I might have said in the opposite direction, but basically, if it looks like it might be good, you should assume it's good. If it looks like it might be bad, you have a right to not assume it's good, but you shouldn't necessarily go ahead, just spreading that wildly. You should be careful about how you judge him. But in Echanam, you have a right to assume that maybe he wasn't doing the right thing. Third case, if you have a person who's a Rasha, he's totally an evil person, so you can see where this is going, right? If you see a person who's a Rasha, he's always raw, he's always doing bad things, so you see something he does is murky, you're not sure if what he did was correct or incorrect, so you can basically assume that he was doing the wrong thing, right? If I knew this guy was a gun, if I saw him stealing from my pocket the day before, then I saw him stealing oranges from the store, so I'd be silly to assume that he was just a good guy making an innocent mistake or having some deal with the store owner. So in those cases, don't have to be down the cuffs. You can assume that the guy was doing the wrong thing. So you basically have to have those views of the person. You have to really know this person's character in order to answer any given question. That can be pretty complicated. If you come back to my case, I knew the guy from Shachar's. I knew the guy from seeing his face. I couldn't tell you if he was a tzaddik, Rasha, or a benoni. I had no way of telling you. I mean, I always assumed he was a tzaddik just because he was a nice guy and had good midos, but I had no way of really telling. So I don't remember this, but my friend who I was talking to, a close friend I was talking to last night, so he told me that he remembers that I also asked another person I think he's lying, but that's why I'm not saying his name. But he said I also asked another. He said I asked Reb Nevinsel. Reb Nevinsel is a big posek in the old city, the Rebbe of the old city. He says I asked Reb Nevinsel. Reb Nevinsel told me that I personally should not give the guy tzedakah anymore because it's too hard for me to assume that he wasn't stealing. But I shouldn't tell other people because I can't really be sure, and I should take this sort of a pshara, this sort of a middle ground. I can't remember even asking the question, so I can't tell you the reasoning behind the logic behind that pshara. But that's what apparently. You know, I'm told that's the story they say about me. That's what they say. Reb Nevinsel told me back in the day. So you should not jump to conclusions. That's the rule of Chafetz Chaim says. And in that context, you have to basically deliberate in every case: should I be jumping to this conclusion or not, based on the person you're looking at? You should never judge a person for the wrong reasons. You should never judge him for doing evil. But if the case is such where it's obvious, and he's the type of person who it's obvious would do that, or it's obvious that he's doing that. So then you have to take those conditions to a different level and try to think, I'm not jumping to conclusions. I'm realizing the Matthias over here. I'm realizing this guy regularly does the wrong thing, and it's not considered jumping to conclusions. Yeah. Right. You could definitely be more creative than me. Like, I thought of two examples, but you can think of a better example where that's why he's taking the fruits or whatever the case might be.
Did you ever find out if
he was a ganav or not? No, I never found that. I don't even remember if I stopped getting stuck. I don't remember the whole thing except for the first part I said. So that's a good question. I think that's, again, like I said before, that's a theme that's going to run through every question we deal with. You're going to have a lot of cases that are murky. You're not 100% sure if it's down the kafs, if it's not down the kafs. That's more of a down the kafs chus question than a lashon hara question, but it factors into this question. Like I said before, and I'm going to get to this again hopefully soon, you are allowed to ask a rav. You're allowed to ask someone a shayla. You're allowed to say, here's what I saw. Do you think this is a plausible excuse, or should I be spreading this? Like, is something that I saw possibly learned the right way, or this guy is doing something wrong, it's dangerous, it's harmful, and I should spread that to other people? You're allowed to ask. It's not lashon hara to ask the rav for help on deciding the issue. So that's one way out of your question, but in Echanami, every question you have to deal with the gray areas as well. Let's try to breeze through the next four or five conditions over here. Try rebuke, source gimel. Try rebuke, you're supposed to give tochacha. So you see someone doing something wrong, you shouldn't immediately jump to go ahead and make conclusions or know with certainty what's going on. You should make sure you're mevarer and make sure you don't jump to conclusions. And then you should try to give tochacha, which touches on what we said a second ago. You should try to approach the person and say, hey, you shouldn't be doing that. Now, why does that make sense? It makes sense for three reasons. First of all, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa of tochacha. A person's supposed to give mussar and help someone go on the right derech. There are rules to that. It's a whole shiur in of itself. There are ways you're supposed to do it, ways you're not supposed to do it. But assuming you do it the right way, you are supposed to approach a person and tell them how to fix their ways. Secondly, this helps you be mevarer. This helps you clarify the case. If I walked up to that guy who was a ganav and said, what were you just doing? And he said, here's my contract that I have with the guy. I'm allowed to take three fruits a day. So I would be like, okay, you know, never mind. I'm going to give you, here's some stucca. You know, like, I would have gotten out of it right away. If I would have approached him to give mussar, it would have clarified the metzias. He could have had a chance to defend himself. And thirdly, even if he doesn't defend himself, you'll have a chance to clarify what's going on, right? You'll have a chance to figure out if what he did was really, really the right thing or really the wrong thing. And it's a way of, you know, if you give him mussar and you accomplish your goal and you get him to stop doing what he's doing, then you've accomplished the goal without speaking lashon hara. So it's a way of avoiding lashon hara entirely. So the idea of tochacha, the idea of rebuke, does make sense. Now, if you look in Soros Gimel, it's an interesting pshat in Psukim. The Chafetz Chaim spells out this rule, and then he says that's the pshat why Yosef HaTzadik was punished for speaking lashon hara. Yosef was passing along information about his brothers, what they had done wrong, to his father. Why was he doing that? He wanted to give them mussar. So he told his father, here's what my brothers are doing. Give them mussar. And yet it's called Dibara, it's called Lashon Hara, and he's punished for that. Why is he punished? That was a Toelis. He should have told them first. That's what the Chafetz Chaim says here in the footnote, Ber Mayim Chaim, in Lashon Hara, Klal Ches. The Chafetz Chaim says, what it says over there that he got in trouble for saying Lashon Hara is because he could have spoken Lashon Hara if he first tried doing it himself. But he didn't try giving the Tokacha himself first. He didn't try talking to the guy face to face, talking to his brothers and saying, you're doing something wrong, here's how you should fix it. Since he didn't try so on his own, he got punished for that on his level. So that's the third rule of the Chafetz Chaim, the third condition. The fourth condition the Chafetz Chaim says, do not exaggerate. Now, this I think is extremely understandable, right? You can say only as much as you need to say. You can't say more than that. And I'm not going to quote anyone who disagrees. I think everyone should agree to that. But let me give you a funny case where it actually becomes a mutter and even a mitzvah to exaggerate, and you'll probably identify with this as well. Let's say, you know, I'll give you an extreme one, okay? So we avoid any real issues. So you have a daughter, let's say, who's a friend, who has a friend. Your daughter's Leah. She's friends with Rivki. And Rivki is overall a very good girl. Overall a very, very good girl. 99% of the day, her hours are spent doing mitzvahs and chasadim. She bakes with the moras and she does all the good things. For an hour a day, she's an axe murderer. I'm serious. A really small part of the day. Not a big deal at all. Okay? Axe murderer. Now, Do you want your daughter Leia hanging out with her?
No.
Even for the 99% of the day?
Yes.
Okay. Why? It's not a big deal.
Axe murder,
big deal. Fine, big deal. Okay, good. Let's say, even if she's a shoplifter, you wouldn't want that. Fine, good. Okay. Now, so you tell your daughter Leia, Rivki's a great girl. She's really great. She has one mida that's not perfect. She could work on it. She's going to go to seminary. She's going to be fine. But for now, I'd rather you not spend too much time with her because there's one flaw with her. You think she's going to listen? She's best friends with her. Okay, everyone has one issue. I also have one issue. You know, and I'm not going to, not your daughters, but most people's daughters have one issue. So are you really going to accomplish anything? Says the Chafetz Chaim, in that case, you should talk to your daughter like this. You should say, do not hang out with Rivki. She's an axe murderer. If you hang out with her, no good will come from it. You'll end up in jail. You're not going to do anything good if you're with her. 99% of the day she's good. No, all of that's bad too. Everything she does is bad. You can't hang out with her. Says the Chafetz Chaim, you're exaggerating and you're not making anything up. You're exaggerating, you're blowing it a little bit out of proportion, but in that case, you're keeping your daughter safe. You're trying to keep her away from the influence, or worse, I guess, of this other friend, and you're allowed to a little bit exaggerate in those cases in order to make sure that the message is heard. To save that person from the danger that they might experience, you're allowed to exaggerate to accomplish that goal.
Wasn't Leia punished because she didn't want to marry Esau? Because if she had married him, she could have possibly changed him to become better.
I thought maybe Yaakov was punished for that, maybe. Yeah, Leia might have been also.
No,
I'm not familiar.
I'm just wondering, it seems very extreme, your definitions of good and bad, it's very judgmental.
Yeah.
That
axe murderer example is judgmental?
Well, if 90% of her is doing mitzvahs.
Okay, maybe. We've had this debate before, I think, where we've noticed that you're a bigger tzaddik, you have a better conception of the people, you're more Dalinkov than me. But maybe you're right, so maybe there will be more extreme examples where we agree. But if we could find an example where we agree, then I think you'd agree to the halacha. But let's continue with the last three conditions. Pure intentions. This is the most obvious. No one will disagree with this, right? A person has to have pure intentions when they're saying the Lashon Hara. They have to think, I'm doing this for a constructive purpose. Now, where it gets complicated is that people are complicated. The human psyche is complex. And so, when you have a business associate who you're trying to save from certain financial dangers of a business enemy, you may want to save your partner, but you also want to disparage your enemy, right? You also want to disparage the person that you hate. If you're trying to prevent someone from going to shidduchim with someone, even though it's true you're trying to save them, you also happen not to like the other side. So how do you kind of dissect and divorce one feeling from the other? That is complicated. The Chafetz Chaim basically tells us the answer is that you can't always, and in those cases you're still obligated to disclose the information. You should just try your hardest in your heart at that moment to push aside the anger and the hate and try to say it for the right reasons. It's true. You're going to feel a little bit of a geschmack in putting another person down. You're going to feel a little bit of the hatred coming out, but try to push it to the side and try to avoid it. And we're only human. We can do the best that we can. Have the purest intentions as opposed to having completely pure intentions, and that's understandable if that's not always completely, completely possible. The sixth condition, you have no other options. Basically, the Chafetz Chaim says if you're able to accomplish this goal by doing other things, you should do so. The Chafetz Chaim adds that even if you could downgrade the Isser of Lashon Hara to a lower level Isser of Lashon Hara, you should do that as well. For example, if a person asks you, should I hire this guy for business? And you know he's a crook. So maybe instead of saying he's a crook, you can say, I don't want to talk about why, but no, you shouldn't hire him. Now, that's Lashon Hara. That's Avak Lashon Hara. That's maybe Lashon Hara Derabanan. But it's not as high a level as saying, no, he's a crook. He's going to rob you blind. Don't hire him. So maybe you take the opportunity to say it a little bit in a more vague, you know, sort of hidden way. And in that way, you avoid the more full-out Isser of Lashon Hara. And that's an option other than speaking full-out Lashon Hara. The seventh condition, and this I don't think I have anything to really comment on, is that no undue damage should come to the person. If the person is caught on some minor crime and you're publicizing in the news and making sure everyone knows about it, then he'll never get a job again. So you have to weigh the damage against what he actually did. Does he really deserve what's going to come out from what you're doing? And if he doesn't, then it's not worth saying in that way. So that's really the seven conditions of the Chafetz Chaim. And they all, like we said before, come out of this conception of Toelas that it's not just that it's mutter because there's no midos raos. It's because it's usser, but there are values that outweigh it. So in those cases, you have to barely look to see if the values outweigh it. And if you could find these seven conditions and fit into them, then you could say the Lashon Hara. I'll end by saying that this is a tall order. This is very difficult. Again, we took these seven conditions and we stepped them down a little bit. We gave examples of exceptions. We gave examples of why they're true and why in some cases they might not be true. So we did that work. But at the end of the day, it might be hard in some cases to meet these seven conditions. If that's true, but you find that the risk is, again, worse of damage than it is for speaking of Lashon Hara, then a person still is obligated to find a way to say it in the most mutter way possible. Maybe we won't be malacha, maybe we won't fit each of the seven conditions, but realize that not everyone agreed to the Chafetz Chaim conditions, and even if you agreed to the Chafetz Chaim's conditions, I think he would agree that if the case was one where someone was at major risk, was in major danger, and you had to speak Lashon Hara in order to save them, and you couldn't quite be completely pure in your intention, you couldn't quite avoid exaggerating, you couldn't quite avoid jumping, whatever the case would be, in those cases, a person should use their discretion, try to use these seven principles as guiding light to how you're going to figure out how to say the Lashon Hara. But at the end of the day, a person needs to accomplish what is safest and what is in his ability to save other people from danger. And hopefully, we'll apply these seven conditions as much as we can and speak Lashon Hara L'Tu'ales as opposed to for any other reason. And Mitzvah Hashem, next time, we'll move on to some examples. Hopefully, we'll even get to Shidduchim, but we'll save that for next week. Everyone have a wonderful rest of the day.